Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And today I'm going to talk about Hermann Göring's appointment as the Reich Plenipotentiary for the Office of the Four-Year Plan. The Office of the Four-Year Plan being Hitler's government ministry that was dedicated to preparing Germany to be autarkic and ready for war by 1940. The war actually begins a year ahead of schedule, but the Office of the Four-Year Plan was the way in which Hitler replaced Hjalmar Schacht, his head of the Reichsbank, who was the chairman of the Reichsbank, who was, in Hitler's eyes, overly cautious. By 1936, the German economy is overheating due to rearmament, and there are a number of other unintended and unforeseen, or at least unforeseen by Hitler, economic side effects of rapid rearmament. And Hjalmar Schacht essentially says to Hitler, we need to slow down. Hitler, not an economist, isn't interested in anything Schacht has to say, particularly slowing down the pace of rearmament. Hitler is interested in one thing, and that is preparing for his war. He simply looks at the likes of Hjalmar Schacht and says, you know, whatever you do, here's what I want, here's what I must have, go and make it happen. And Hitler believes his ability to order and to dictate are enough, and this will help to come around harsh economic realities. The problems began for Schacht in about 1935. In 1934, Schacht's new plan, his economic model to manage rearmament and also manage inflation and the balance of payments crisis, temporarily succeeds. By 1935, there is a huge balance of payments crisis, and this runs into 1936. Balance of payments, to non-economists, is the balance between imports and exports and the amount of gold. The gold reserves have to be shifted to other countries as a result. If a country is a net importer, it has a balance of payments deficit, and if it's a net exporter, it has a balance of payments surplus. And Germany had become a net importer, partly because German workers who were pouring into the munitions industries found that they had large quantities of disposable income, and there weren't the consumer goods to purchase because of the huge amount of resources pouring into the arms industries. Hjalmar Schacht had tried to encourage exports. He had forced creditor countries to take as payment of German debts special marks which could only be used for buying German goods or for travel in Germany, something that would be no doubt very unattractive. He introduced a tax on firms which was used to subsidise exports. These initiatives were only able to kind of mitigate a fundamental problem, which is the huge increase in demand for imports because of the work creation programmes and rearmament programmes. So not only did German consumers with new disposable income want to spend more, but also the German economy is bringing in imports of steel and all sorts of other things consistently from overseas. The growth of the economy at home meant that firms found it more attractive to sell on the home market than to try to export overseas to get through protectionist barriers, face fierce competition, and with all the costs of exporting that exporting normally has. Anyway, and the fundamental issue was one of guns and butter. There was a clear relationship between rearmament and the standard of living of ordinary people, and Schacht said in November 1938, "Reduced to a simple formula, the problem is as follows. The credit money made available for armament purposes produces a demand for consumer goods through the payment of wages and salaries. The armament manufacturers, however, deliver military goods which are produced but not put on the market. From this follow two consequences. First, care must be given that aside from an armament manufacturer, sufficient consumer goods are produced to sustain the population, including those working for the armaments industry. Second, the less there is consumed, the more labour can be used for armaments, but the higher consumption rises, the more manpower must be left for the production of consumer goods. Therefore, the standard of living and the extent of the armaments production are at an inverse ratio. Something Hitler doesn't understand and isn't interested in and doesn't care about. Hitler's view of himself as dictator is that simply orders are given and obeyed, and the vision that Hitler wants will be created. This sort of complex kind of stuff Hitler views as simply as excuses. Simply sweep these problems away, he says. But economies very rarely respond to these kinds of demands. Germany's foreign exchange reserves couldn't pay for both rearmament and consumer goods when we're talking about imports. And since 1933, German agricultural production had failed to keep pace with rising demand, and which had followed increasing employment. And this was partly because the Reich Food Estate, which was Hitler's reorganisation of farms, had discouraged expansion and made expansion of farms unattractive. And it had meant that what was keeping the smaller farm was the way in which farmers could charge high prices. So you had expensive foods and not much, and low supply. Now, Schacht was no dove on the subject of rearmament, and he wanted to make sure that rearmament was prioritised when it came to foreign exchange, when it came to reserves of foreign currency that Germany had in order to buy steel from America and things like that. And he was reluctant to apportion more, a bigger percentage of foreign exchange to foodstuffs. But he did suggest to Hitler that the breakneck pace of rearmament was something that was unsustainable, and in the long term it would be better to slow down. By December 1935, Schacht has to tell Werner von Blomberg, the defence minister, that the doubling of copper and lead imports that had been demanded by the armed forces was now impossible, and that raw material supplies for rearmament couldn't be guaranteed even at the existing level. And so Hitler is starting to face a significant problem when it comes to his rearmament programme. A possible solution would have been to boost exports to get the foreign currency, much in the way that countries such as, I mean, for example, the Soviet Union during the 1930s had poured, been happy to weather famines in order to export grain, in order to raise foreign currency, in order to industrialise. And the boosting of foreign exports was one method. Germany, however, was carrying out import controls and concluding bilateral trade deals. And so it was unlikely, unless you're starting to conclude multilateral trade deals and allow imports to flow into the country, it is unlikely that other countries are going to simply sit back and embrace German exports. The other option was to cut down on imports to meet the demand for raw materials, and as far as possible to expand home production. So here we see the origins of autarky, of autarkic thinking. And this is, again, something that Schacht later on becomes hugely opposed to. And autarky, the drive for self-sufficiency, is a policy of very, very limited benefits. Trying to expand agriculture was problematic. There was a short labour supply in the countryside, and the countryside could not compete with the towns and cities in terms of wages, therefore to attract people to remain there. And in addition to this, industry itself faced all sorts of pressures for resources, as we've seen, particularly oil. Romania, which was Germany's biggest supplier of oil, began to insist that their imports, their exports to Germany, were paid for in cash, not wanting, and in fully convertible currency, not wanting to rely on Germany's creditworthiness. One solution that was presented by the chemical giant IG Farben was the production of synthetic oil and rubber, which could be derived from cracking coal. It was hoped that the German government would put up a significant amount of finance to underwrite the research and industrial processes to create this hydrogenation process. The rubber plant that the IG Farben eventually built is the Bühnewerks at Auschwitz-Monowitz, which can be seen by even now by visitors to Oświęcim. If you're on the road from Krakow to Oświęcim, it's kind of on your left at about halfway through the journey. You'll see two huge chimneys, and it's still a going concern. One of the first great supporters of the synthetic fuel industry was Hermann Göring. He was vitally interested that the fuel-hungry Luftwaffe had an unlimited supply of aviation fuel in order to power planes. And the influence that Göring had over Hitler decided the matter. And on the 4th of April 1936... Göring was first appointed Commissioner of Raw Materials, and this gave him the authority to further research and development into synthetic.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Fuel. Shanks realised that this appointment was a threat to his position and was entirely wary of Goering's intervention into the workings of the economy. And the view that Shanks had on synthetic or ersatz raw materials was that they were uneconomic. The transformation of coal into oil is fantastically inefficient, and Schacht believed would be unsustainable during a war. It was far better to find more sensible economic solutions that would appeal to Romania and other importers of raw materials and help and prevent the German economy from overheating. Schacht said to Werner von Blomberg, "If we now proclaim to the world, yet again, our determination to achieve economic independence, we will be cutting our own throats because we can no longer last out the necessary transition period. In addition, it must be continually emphasised that German raw materials are at the moment much too expensive to be used in goods intended for export, and only exports can make possible further rearmament." Bloomberg replied, "Herr Schacht, I realise that you're absolutely right, but I'm convinced that the Führer or find a way out of all these difficulties." People were really saying that all the way up to 1945. This faith in the Führer was undimmed amongst many of his ministers right until the end. And it was the assumption that Hitler, in some mystical way, unknown to mere mortals, would find a way through somehow, because that's kind of what he did. So, this is the fantasy, really. Karl Gerdler, who was the Reich Price Commissioner, and later one of the Beck-Gerdler group, and an opponent of Hitler, suggested that imports should be cut, and that there should be a return to freer trade, so tariff barriers brought down. This was verging on suggesting that there should be a return to mass unemployment. And so this was ruled out. But because Schacht and Gerdler were opponents of autarky, they had the support of much of German commerce and the export-minded parts of industry. And this was the coal, iron and steel industries tended to support Schacht and Gerdler. And in this moment of opposition, during August 1936, Hitler composed one of the following memoranda. Albert Speer later set eyes upon it in 1944 when it was presented to him by Hitler. And Speer wrote, "The lack of understanding of the Reich Ministry for Economics and the opposition of German business to all large-scale plans induced him, Hitler, to compose this memorandum at Obersalzburg." On the occasion of Goering's appointment as the official in charge of the four-year plan, he gave him this memorandum. There are only three copies, one of which he gave to me. It's a long and rambling tract, and I'm not going to read it to you all because it would take a long time. Not much of it is of any meaningful value. It is Hitler's kind of rather general observations on the world. But when he discusses the economy, he makes the following points. He says, firstly, he claims, "We are overpopulated and cannot feed ourselves from our own resources. When our nation has 6 or 7 million unemployed, the food situation improves because these people lack purchasing power. It naturally makes a difference whether 6 million people have 40 marks a month to spend or 100 marks. It should not be overlooked that a third of all who earn their living is involved. That is to say, that taken as a proportion of the total population through the National Socialist Economic Policy, about 28 million people have been afforded an increase in their standard of living, an average from at least 50 marks a month to 100, 120 marks. So people have more disposable income. But this rise in employment if this rise in employment fails to take place, the effect of undernourishment will be that a higher percentage of the population must gradually be deducted from the body of our nation, so far as its effective contribution is concerned. Thus, despite the difficult food situation, the most important task of our economic policy is to see that all Germans are incorporated in the economic process so that prerequisites for normal consumption are created. So there he was talking about ensuring that all Germans are employed, part of the kind of the work to build the nation. Hitler recognised that imports needed to be encouraged for the time being, that exporting was very difficult, and that there was intense competition in world markets. He said, "It's however impossible to use foreign exchange allocated for the purchase of raw materials to import foodstuffs without inflicting a heavy and perhaps even fatal blow on the rest. But above all, it's absolutely impossible to do this at the expense of national rearmament." So people, in Hitler's eyes, could go hungry if it meant that rearmament was safeguarded. He goes on to talk about war. "I must at this point sharply reject the view that by restricting national rearmament, that is today, the manufacture of arms and ammunition, we could bring about an enrichment in raw materials that might benefit Germany in the event of war. Such is a view based on a complete misconception. To put it mildly, the tasks and military requirements that lie of the tasks and military requirements that lie before us. For even a successful saving of raw materials by reducing, for instance, the production of munitions would merely mean that we should stockpile these raw materials in the time of peace so as to manufacture them only in the event of war. So that is to say, we should be depriving ourselves during the most critical months of munitions in exchange for raw copper, lead and possibly iron." Hitler goes on to say it would be better to convert all raw materials, metal raw materials, into munitions as quickly as possible. You don't really want to start a war and have stockpiles of raw materials instead of weapons, which, I mean, this just focuses on his precisely what he is interested in at this time, which is all things moving towards war. But he says, "War makes possible the mobilisation of even the last remaining supplies of metal, for then it becomes not an economic problem but solely a question of will, and the National Socialist leadership of the country will not only have the will, but also the resolution and toughness necessary to solve these problems in the event of war." So Hitler is again there not thinking in particularly coherent economic terms. He believes that economics is something that can be suborned to his own personal political will and the interests of war. Goering was made plenipotentiary for the four-year plan in October 1936, which is when the plan is put into action, and he began to develop an organisation for putting the four-year plan into operation. He had two different strategies. He developed a separate four-year plan organisation with six departments responsible for raw materials, the distribution of those raw materials, the labour force, agricultural production, price controls and foreign exchange. And responsibility for the production of raw materials was given to the Office for German Raw Materials and the Office for Planning and Production of Industrial Fats. The coordination of these six departments was carried out by one of his subordinates from the Prussian State Ministry, who was also made head of the four-year plan department, Neumann. And the most significant of the departments was the Office for German Raw Materials, which had responsibility for the main objective of the four-year plan, which was producing raw materials. The office was staffed by Air Force officers, because obviously this was another one of Goering's many portfolios, and representatives from industry. The most significant being Karl Krauch from IG Farben, and the responsibility for the development of, it says in some of the official documentation, vital chemicals. But what it means is synthetic fuel. So because Goering was in charge of the Office of the Four-Year Plan, and because he had previously taken an interest, despite Schacht's advice on synthetic fuel, the top level of the Office of the Four-Year Plan were Air Force officers, Luftwaffe officers, that wanted synthetic fuel, and IG Farben engineers and scientists that wanted the finance to be able to create it. The four-year plan focused on the raw materials office focused on oil, rubber, light metals, and of course gunpowder and explosives. And these were fast-tracked into a special express plan, which was run by Karl Krauch. The Krauch plan, which was introduced on the 30th of June 1938, was meant to cover a four-year period. But it was widely thought that war would come a lot sooner than that. Okay, well, I'm going to finish there now. I've gone a little further into that than I'd intended, so we'll come back to the four-year plan soon. And I hope you found that useful. If you are looking for any additional kind of material and ideas and interested generally in the exciting world of modern history, you can check out the Explaining History Facebook group. There'll be a link in this podcast, and come and join us. I look forward to speaking to you soon. Thanks very much. All the best. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.